Hello, everyone. I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to a brand new episode of Hi Jinx with me, Jinx Monsoon. Today, my guest is a personal icon, legend. She's just a legend. She has done so many different things in her career, continues to be this effervescent, gorgeous goddess amongst humans. It's Vanessa Williams. We're going to talk about Miss America, her time on Broadway, her continuing time on Broadway. We're going to talk about Ugly Betty, her work with many other famous, iconic people. And of course, we're going to get into Queen of the Universe, which has season two either coming out or it's out, but it's out there and she's on it. Listen to me talk to one of my favorite people in existence, Vanessa Williams, for the very first time. That's what this show's all about. It's hijinks today on hijinks. So buckle up, hunker down, sink your teeth into some brand new hijinks. How's that for an opener?
M.
Oh.
M.
Mom!
Everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by actress, singer, dancer, author, and she is back as a judge for the second season of Queen of the Universe, Season 2. It's Miss Vanessa Williams. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, Jinx.
So this is, okay, there are moments in my life where through my career and the blessings I have received, I get to meet someone that I never in a million years fathomed that I'd get to have a conversation with. This is one of those moments. If I seem nervous at all, it's just because I bow down to thee. I pray at your altar. You are a goddess on earth. We have so much we can talk about. I don't even know where to begin. But I think I want to begin at, you know, kind of the beginning and just get it out of the way. I was reading in my notes when you were born, your birth certificate read, "Here she is, Miss America." And this was like a prophecy at your birth because, as we all know, you won Miss America and you were the first African American contestant to win Miss America. You also suffered a bit of a misogynist backlash to you having autonomy over your own body and your own sexuality. And it took them years before they finally apologized to you, but they did in 2016. So in your words, how about all of that?
Well, all in a nutshell. Well, thank you for the question. and yes, when I was born and my mother was sending out the birth announcements back in the day, you'd get them in the mail and you'd see the name and the size and the weight. It had a little baby carriage and it said, "Here she is, Miss America," in 1963. Who would have known that that actually would happen 20 years later in 83 when I became the first Black Miss America? So that was crazy. And talking about prophecy, that is very woo-woo. So that was crazy. And that was also one of those things where, you know, I grew up in New York. Both my parents were music teachers. I wanted to be on Broadway. So like being a beauty queen was not something that I was groomed to be and was a Little Miss this, that, whatever. It was kind of like I fell into it after my sophomore year when I was at Syracuse majoring in musical theater. And I had some extra time free at the end of the year. I had been kind of scouted on, on the campus because they had seen me in all these productions and like, would you be in the Miss Local Greater Syracuse pageant? And I blew it off for months. And then at the end of the year, I said, Mom, do you think I should do this? And she's like, is there scholarship money? I was like, yeah, well, then do it. Because I always gotten scholarship monies, in the previous year. So, it happened within 6 months from Syracuse to New York to Miss America. Within from April to September, I won the whole thing. So it's crazy how life is just, you wonder, is it fate? Was it meant to be? Or is it just happenstance and kind of going on this whimsical journey of life? After 10 months of my reign as Miss America, I had like a month left of appearances to go and a 2-week vacation. And a photographer that I had worked on as a summer gig back when I was in high school and summer, you get a summer job. Yeah. And I worked at this local modeling registry, which should have been the key word because it wasn't an agency, it was a registry. And I was doing makeup for people to get their portfolios to become models. And this particular photographer who I was working for in the summer said, I'd love to shoot you and, nobody will see them, blah, blah, blah. I didn't sign any release, whatever. So he ended up selling those photographs or shopping them around while I was Miss America. Mm. And a lot of people passed because there was no release. But Bob Guccione, who was the owner of Pentest magazine, said, I'll take them. And that's kind of what happened my final month of my reign. And it was a huge, huge scandal. Again, I look back, I was 21 years old. And I think, I'm a mother of four now. I look back at how young that really is as a human being dealing with anxiety, stress, shame, judgment. And I think, like, how did I make it through? And I look back with the wisdom that I have now. And I said, well, I kind of knew who I was, crazily enough, and I knew what talent I had. And I just trusted that I had the support of my family, the support of all my friends that had been in shows with me that knew what I could do and knew that I would have an opportunity to one day show my real stuff. It took a long time. It took many attempts. It took a lot of judgment, a lot of people wanted to come and see me just so they could say, oh my God, I saw that Vanessa Williams. I had her in as auditioning for this, that, got a lot of crappy offers, but there were the people that would allow me to have a chance and take a chance on me. And those are the ones, those little increments of success help just tick off the boxes and make you a success.
That is incredible. There's so much to talk about here. I want to point out a few things that really stood out to me. Okay, so Rue is always talking about, when the universe opens a path for you, it might not be the exact path you saw for yourself. You were kind of talking about that, like, your goal was to be a musical theater actor. The universe opened this pageant route for you. And you must have realized, okay, I could use one to get to the other. One could support the other. And, I definitely was always open-minded to, I knew I wanted a career in entertainment, but I just went every avenue that opened up because I'm like, one of these things is going to be the thing, Then to hear how your career was manipulated by men and the kind of like puritanical backlash you faced and the fact that it took till 2016 for them to kind of acknowledge, hey, it reminds me a lot of, the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction.
Nipplegate.
And we've since talked about it. Here's this quote unquote wardrobe malfunction. And Justin Timberlake had, walked away from that just completely unscathed. But Janet Jackson, who for whatever reason, had her breast exposed by someone else, she was like turned into a pariah because of the, you know, the mainstream media's attitude towards female sexuality. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so really, like, your career is a really early example of the whole dichotomy of the virgin whore model that mainstream media pushes women through. And you're really a pioneer for breaking that down and being that success story of someone who didn't let that stop you, like you said, making these incremental steps. And now we know you as Vanessa fucking Williams, you know? It's really incredible to hear your point of view with that story. And as a hard left turn, I want to talk about, I think, a very significant moment post Miss America, which was you playing the witch in the revival in Into the Woods. I know this was extremely significant for me, as that's one of my favorite musicals. I loved your rendition of the witch. This is a musical theater question I want to ask that I don't know who else will be interested in, but okay. I've always wanted to ask this. So the song Our Little World was mm-hmm. in the original London production as the show was being developed. It was not in the first original Broadway production with Bernadette yes. Peters, but they did put it back in for your revival. And I'd love to know if there's a story behind that.
The story is that I heard it and I said, I would love to do this. And I pitched a pas de deux, a lovely dance, because I dance and I wanted to do a dance with my daughter, because I wanted to kind of, you know, Rapunzel plays the daughter of the witch mm-hmm. in the show, for people that don't know Into the Woods.
Spoilers.
So, yeah. yeah. So we did this beautiful dance with, I'm holding her long braid and dealing with her braid and dancing with her braid while I'm singing Our Little World is big enough for two, it's perfect, and trying to seduce her, showing her that the world with me would be a safe, better place. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. So that was me pleading with Steve Sondheim and James Lapine, and they went for it.
I love that it was added back in because, you know, without that song, you don't see any, you only kind of see the hostage situation. And yes. you don't see, like, Rapunzel becomes a more two-dimensional character without that song in the show, because it's a bigger choice for her to want to leave the tower and be with her prince if she does have some kind of positive relationship right. with the witch.
And that's, you know? That's the safe space that the witch is trying to say, it's a safe space with me. I've got you covered. The world will never come and destroy you. So yeah. you see her pleading in that area as opposed to being one-dimensional. And I completely agree. So I'm glad yeah. you like that addition.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Into the Woods is one of my favorite musicals. Sondheim is definitely my favorite composer. And I remember, you know, it was a big thing when you played this role, not just because, oh, wow. Oh,
I'm looking yeah. for, that's me singing Happy Birthday to Steve on his 80th birthday when we did Sondheim and Sondheim on Broadway.
I love
that. Yep, yep, yep. I've got a ton of Steve memorabilia. Plus, I don't know if you can see in the back, that's me playing the witch. That's the doll that was made as me as the witch. And I have one right here. I know this is, no one can see this, but this is me in Kiss of the Spider Woman. That's my Gimme Love doll.
I love it. So can you tell us a little bit about reviving such, you know, Stephen Sondheim being like the Shakespeare of musical theater? It's a big deal anytime I think a Sondheim musical gets revived on Broadway. And I feel like it was a big deal, not just because the role had previously been played by Bernadette Peters, who's also a big Broadway diva, But, you know, it was at a time, and it's still very much like this. Of course, progress is being made all the time, but it was at a time where Broadway was very, very whitewashed. So for you to play a lead female role in a highly anticipated revival where the role wasn't written, you know, to be a Black woman. Like, it was written with Bernadette Peters in mind, and then you're playing it in the revival.
Well, for some Broadway history, actually, Bernadette came second.
Oh, she came second?
Betty Buckley was doing the Out of Town in San Diego. Okay. Betty Buckley was fired. Bernadette came in. And that's
so this is like a Sunset Boulevard situation?
So Bernadette ended up coming and doing it in San Diego, and then they brought it to New York. So she was number two, not honestly number two choice, but number two in the witch slot. And then when I first saw it, I was living out in LA. So I saw Cleo Lane do the witch. Mm-hmm. That is one of my friends, Tracy Katz from Syracuse, who I went to school with. She was playing Little Red. So I saw her at the Amundsen. So I had already seen a number of witches.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, by the time I got the chance to do it.
Oh, yeah? Thank you for schooling me. That's a life dream come true. Now, you have done a lot of notable TV acting work. Of course, we need to talk about Ugly Betty. But before we do, I want to talk about something a little bit more recent that was just a really special thing. Being a musical theater fan and a huge fan of the show Broad City, you playing that like sugar mama Dom CEO femme boss bitch with Alana Glazer, and you deliver my favorite line where you go, "She has salad fingers," and then we get to hear you later doing a reprise of Alana's song "I Shit," and I was like, they got Vanessa Williams to sing "I Shit" in the bathroom, and I was just—it was such a lovely episode for that reason.
I miss that show so much. It was so innovative, and that's the wonderful thing about, you know, cable back in the day where it wasn't on network TV, but they got a chance to really be broad as Broad City and be so innovative. There were such incredible writers and such freedom on that set. And I think I got Amy Poehler was the one who, she was one of the executive producers, and she's the one who called and said, "We'd love to have you on the show." And when Amy calls, you go. And I was just so happy to be a part of an incredible cast. And the writing was amazing.
Oh, yeah. It's one of the episodes I think I referenced the most because of your cameo in it. And you look gorgeous. And I love the queer sensibility of Broad City because it's two females, but they in many ways are just two gay men in female bodies for all the best reasons. Yeah. You were also on Ugly Betty, which is prime time. It's almost like a comedic soap opera, prime time comedy drama. And you play like a Disney villainess in it.
Thank you. And it was, you know, I look back and it was ahead of its time. I mean, our first season, we were already talking about Rebecca Romijn comes in as a trans person. We're talking 2006 when we started shooting. So all of these themes that are now popular and part of our American lexicon, Sylvia Huerta, who was our creator, introduced these all in the very beginning. So it was great to be part of an innovative, you know, a little background on Ugly Betty. We were supposed to be a Friday night show that ABC was just kind of one of those Friday nights for gals that have nothing to do and are watching TV at home. And we got such great, our pilot got such great press from the critics that when we were doing our TCAs, our Television Critics Association luncheon and our tables, and the critics would come up to us and say, you know, you're really the best thing that they've got this season. And they pushed us up front on Thursday nights with Grey's Anatomy being, you know, our amazing a partner. And that's kind of what gave us the check to be considered family entertainment. Yeah. And that really gave us, you know, instead of being brushed aside, we were like the little engine that could, like, okay, well, they're lucky. Okay. We got them Thursday nights. Okay. Then when we got the Golden Globe and all of a sudden we're like, okay, this is going to be a hit for us. Yeah. So it was like that little engine that could, that like, there is an audience, just wait. When I did the pilot, I was like, wow, that's fun. It'll never get picked up, but that was a lot of fun. And then, because there was nothing on it. Like, there was nothing about fashion. There was nothing with our dialogue. You know, I could say tranny back then and it was okay. No, there was no people like up in arms. That was just part of the lexicon that we could introduce on ABC. So we were really ahead of our time.
Yeah. It's always interesting going back and watching some of those shows when the language was different and when different things were considered acceptable. And it's like, you watch it now and you're like, oh, I can't believe they said this. But watching it back then was, oh my gosh, they're finally talking about our community. Like, you know, and it was like, of course, we now refer to that word as the T-slur, but back then, to even hear people acknowledging that we exist on mainstream television was a big deal. To see America Ferrera as the lead character was a big deal. Michael Urey as your assistant.
Well, you know the Michael Urey story.
Yes, he was on the podcast and he talked about how you were his champion and how he would have been like a one-line throwaway role if it hadn't been for you and him having good chemistry and you advocated for him to stick around and then he became a mainstay character.
He was brilliant. You couldn't deny. I was like, this guy is amazing. Yeah. And he would do stuff that was not, but was beyond on the page. He, you know, I'm sure he told you, but, you know, he was giving me Botox and I'm in my lounger. And so while we were rehearsing, he said, is it okay if I pretend that there's leftover and you give it to me? I said, sure. So we did the scene and there was a little bit and he's like, can I? I said, go right ahead. And he's like, can we tape up my eyebrows so I get one but not the other? I mean, all these little bits that were completely spontaneous and he was so good. So we loved working off of each other.
Yeah. It's such a cool story too. And, I think I hadn't watched, Ugly Betty until the pandemic when it was like, okay, what's every TV show I missed, you know, cause you used to have to watch TV on a schedule and now you can watch basically anything at any point. It was a wonderful show. It had lots of examples of representation before that was a conversation we were actively having. And then, you know, flash forward to today, you are a judge on the first ever all drag singing competition.
Yes.
And you are a judge alongside my friends Michelle Visage and Trixie Mattel. And then this season, season two, you have Mel B as the fourth judge. And then Graham Norton hosts.
Yes.
Let's talk about this. Before you won Celebrity Drag Race and before you started judging on Queen of the Universe, what was your interaction with the drag community?
Well, I had known Rue for years. I probably met him in the 80s, did his radio show in the 90s. So always loved him. And he, of course, really defined an era and made drag popular. And also growing up in New York, I mean, Lady Bunny, I mean, I was born in 63. I lived through the 80s and 90s. I'm actually in the process of doing a new album. And there's one song that I'm talking about that really is a tribute to my friends that I lost during the AIDS crisis, which, you know, I mean, I had five people from my first wedding in 87 that passed away from AIDS. I mean, so it's not something that is like, you know, skated over lightly in my past and in my, my career. So, so drag was part of New York in the day. And then also seeing Rue become this megastar. The next time we worked together was when he did an episode of Ugly Betty. When we were shot it at the box. Sorry, I've got two giant dogs that
Are loud. You got two Great Danes. It's in my notes.
yeah. So, sorry. Can we edit this out or?
Oh, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay, because I can close the door.
No, no, no. We like it raw and real.
So, yeah. So growing up in New York, for sure, drag queens were part of the club scene and just part of life. Yeah. And then the first time I worked with Rue was when we did, he was the MC, MC of one of our, when Wilhelmina has a drag double, and it ended up being, my brother ended up playing my drag double. Will a Diva Hater. That's who he played. So so that's the last time I worked with Rue on television. And then, of course, when Rue calls, I'm always there.
Yeah. So what what has it been like having, you know, having been a competitor in your career? And then we know about the competition just being a female in the industry. What's it like now stepping into the position of judge and giving feedback to young hopefuls? Do you get off on the power? is it nerve-wracking for you in any way? What's it like? And how obnoxious is Trixie on set?
She's hilarious. Her one-liners are incredible. You know, I just recently saw her this fall sell out Radio City Music Hall. And I was like, when I saw her backstage, go, do you realize you sold out Radio City Music Hall, bitch? I mean, that's major. I grew up in New York going to see the Rockettes, the Christmas show, the Easter show, and you sold it out. So be proud of that. So being a judge, I love it because since it's a live singing competition, I get a chance to judge them on their voice, their technique, their star quality, and if they're reacting and really playing to the audience. I mean, we can give them tips, but they really have to make the audience vote for them. I let Trixie do drag, and Michelle, of course, does drag. So anyone who comes out with green, she's got an issue with, but which I didn't realize until sitting next to Trixie. But I think it's a great combo. We love each other. We're great friends. And we all have our different like specialties. And then Mel B, adding her in the mix, she's been doing so many competition shows that she's a great judge because she never has a loss for words and is always out of her seat. And she definitely brought a different dynamic to season two this year.
Yeah. I love that it's an all-femme judging panel. I love Graham Norton as the host. He's a sweetheart. And I love, you know, showing that drag is the art form or the medium with which we express our talents. But, you know, drag queens, like you were saying about Trixie selling out Radio City Music Hall, that is because she's a drag queen who is also a hilarious comedian, also an incredible musician, an incredible performer. So it's like, you know, I love you mentioning the star power because there's a lot of things that can be taught and learned and you can learn technique. But there's also just like you gotta have that like innate drive and passion for it. It's not enough just to want to be the best. You got to put the work in and put in the dedication to be the best. It doesn't all come down to who's the prettiest, you know?
Yeah, or in this case, who's the best singer? I mean, we had some shockers in season one when Ada Vox came out and opened her mouth. We were like, oh my God, who is going to top her? Because she's killing it every time. And as the episodes went on and as the competition went on, and we, you know, again, we're not voting every time, you realize that, oh, it's not just about the voice. It's about star quality. It's about, you know, showing your best, you know, sides. And maybe it's not about being the best technical singer. It's your song choice. Did you sing the best song that really highlights your best, you know? So it's, and again, at the end, we never know actually who wins because they crown two queens. So they leave it. So there's no spoilers. So they leave it up to, you know,
which is so fun to live with for a year. Let me tell you. Vanessa, I have one big question I want to ask you as a theater person.
Yes.
So you've played The Witch in Into the Woods. You've played many Broadway roles. You've played many singing roles in television and film. But at this point in your life, what would be your next Broadway dream role?
I've got a couple things in development.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. And one is about a showgirl in the 40s. And one is about a mysterious gal who shows up but also can sing and dance and in a retro time period. So one has to be written. One has to be adapted. But it would be... I love playing period pieces because the costumes are great. And, you know, I don't know if you've seen anything this season on Broadway, but you've got Some Like It Hot, you've got, you know, New York, New York, all those amazing costumes and and that feel of elegance. I love to jump into. So they haven't been done on Broadway, but hopefully they will be done within the next 5 to 10 years. But the run role that I always love to do, which I'm way too old for, is Anita and West Side Story. I mean, it doesn't get spicier than that. That'll never happen, but it's one of my favorite roles.
Have you given thought to playing Mama Rose? Is that something you would see in your future? Is that a part that I only ask because I feel like it's one of those like rites of passage for so many Broadway divas.
I did a little bit of her when I did Sondheim and Sondheim in 2010, and I sang a song called Smile, and it was very talking about the young kids who you get out there and sell it, kids. So that was me. That show was cut from Gypsy. Again, another show, another song that was cut working with Steve. And I said, please, can I do this? So I did Smile. And of course I saw Patti LuPone do it with Laura Benanti. And it was just the best production that I had seen. So I don't know. I would love to do it, but I don't know whether... you know, that and also MAME, that's another one that people have kind of thrown out there. Would I want to do it? Again, it would have to be the right take of being a woman in color. Where, what age are we doing it? What does the world look like? So we'll have to see. But I love those strong broads. There's nothing better than that.
Yeah. Do you have someone in mind to play your Vera if you were playing MAME?
Oh, I don't know. There's so many talented, I don't know.
If I said off the top of my head, oh, who's a good Lush?
I mean, Leslie Kritzer cracks me up. She's one of my favorite. Leslie is one of my favorite comedic musical theater gals. Leslie Kritzer out there. She could do anything.
Vanessa Williams, Miss Vanessa Williams, I have some compulsory questions that I ask every guest. Okay. You're allowed to answer them however you want. Okay. But before I ask them, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for this lovely conversation. Remind everyone to watch season 2 of Queen of the Universe. We've talked about a lot of different projects Vanessa's been on. So go down a binging rabbit hole and become an even bigger fan of Vanessa Williams than you were before you listened to this.
Look for new music. I'll have new music out by the end of the year, luckily. I'll hopefully have a single out. And Paramount Plus has been very good to me.
And where can my listeners find you online?
When you're talking about when the music comes out,
or like, are you on Instagram? Are you just at Vanessa Williams?
I am Vanessa Williams Official on Instagram. Same thing with Facebook, if anyone does it, and Twitter. I'm not off Twitter yet, but I'm not really active on it.
Dumpster fire. Vanessa, feel free to answer these questions however you want. First question is, who's your celebrity crush today?
Ooh. Who is my celebrity crush? Who's hot? I'm just trying to think of what I'm watching now. I just finished watching Succession. I just finished watching Ted Lasso.
So this question does really stress some people out. I gotta say,
it does. There's not one that comes top of mind. You know what I would say? And I got a chance to do. I did City of Angels in the West End, and we got closed down because of COVID. But we were in previews, and Theo James, who was in the last version of White Lotus, and he did show his piece. He played Cameron. So for all those gals who know Cameron, who was the hot husband on White Lotus, I would say Theo James is my celebrity crush.
Awesome. I love that. My celebrity crush today is Shruti Gatwa. He was on Sex Education. He's the new doctor in Doctor Who. He just popped into my mind because I was missing him.
I love Sex Education. Yeah. It was such a good series.
Yeah. I worked with him on Doctor Who recently, and he is just the sweetest, kindest, most charming man, and he was just poured into his pants. His ass looked like it was going to rip through his 60s trousers at any moment. Anyway, next question is, are you spiritual?
Yes, I am. Yes, I'm looking for a token, but yes, I have an amazing meditation group that I do twice a week. I find that the older you get, the more wisdom you have, the easier it is to go inside and find that peace, that ease, that health and happiness, which is what it's all about. Just being connected and being grounded. And that's what it's all about.
You know, between what you just said and the fact that your office is full of artifacts and mementos, I'd venture to say you practice a lot of tenets of witchcraft, whether you do it consciously or not. My final question for you is, and I love asking this question to musical theater people, but what is your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, karaoke? Yeah. Joker, Steve Miller. It's because I'm a 70s rock child, and some people call me a space cowboy. Yeah, some call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice. So I love that. I'm a grinner. I'm a lover, and I'm a sinner. So I just love it's. It's easy. It's rock and roll. That, or probably a B-52 song, which is, you know.
B-52s, that's one of my go-tos. Me and my music partner, we both, our first like connection was B-52s. And so we always sing like Love Shack or Good Stuff or Rock Lobster.
Rock Lobster.
Yeah.
Yep.
We did it once in Birmingham, England. And I guess the B-52s aren't as big in the UK, but we're used to like singing Love Shack and it brings the whole house down. Yeah. In Birmingham, we sung it and it was like crickets. I had one thing in my notes I forgot to bring up, so I'm just going to close out congratulating you on grandmotherhood, Mumsy.
Thank you.
It was in my notes that you really would love to talk about being a grandmother. So is this a new is this a new journey in your life?
It's amazing. My grandson is 15 months old now, and it's like reliving my being a mom again, because I see mm-hmm. him and I see my daughter in him, and it's just the best. So I look forward to just teaching him and showing him the world and exploring an adventure. I'm the grandmother that's like, I have a backpack, like, let's go for an adventure. And then we're off, and he loves it. And we listen to our latest soundtrack is The Jungle Book. And I just throw my iPhone on, put up my speaker, and we listen to the score, and he loves it. So
I love
it's the
it.
Best. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I've watched my mom really have a lot of fun being a grandma with my niece. And I realize it's like you get the fun parts of parenting and yes. then you hand them off.
You got it. You got it.
Well, congratulations. It was so lovely talking to you today. Can't wait to see all the many ways in which you grace our television screens, our many various screens and stages in the years to come. Thanks so much, Vanessa.
Thank you, James. Have a great day. You too.
And thank you all so much for listening to Hijinx here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday. So make sure to search for Hijinx wherever you get your podcast listening done. I'm at The Jinx on Instagram, at Jinx Monsoon everywhere else, except for TikTok. I'm at Official Jinx Monsoon on TikTok. We'll see you next Wednesday for some more hijinks.
M.
Oh.
M.
Mom.
To listen to Hijinx one day early and ad-free, sign up for Mom Plus at mompodcasts.plus. Hijinx is produced by Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, and produced by Joseph Shepherd. Editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Big Dipper, and Joe Cilio.